I'm aware that you received formally the apology of the minister and the DG, but just to offer their apologies, they are involved with some of the prep work of the World Forestry Congress, which there are already some preliminary workshops and meetings taking place. I'm also glad to know that Dr. Marisani was going to be late. He has joined us. But unfortunately, his apology is no longer on the table. Chairperson, our delegation today consists of officials from the Office of the State Law Advisor who has been working on the respective bills, as well as the lime consuming units responsible for the plant breeders' rights bill and the plant improvement bill. This committee considered the plant breeders' rights bill and plant improvement bill on the 25th. Of August, and we received the comments as emanated from that meeting. That provided responses in the form of a PowerPoint presentation. These are the comments that arose from the parliamentary legal advisor, and we are very happy for those comments. We've also, in considering those comments, identified the need for us to have a meeting with the Office of the State Law Advisor, but we did not want to delay the submission of our initial responses, and therefore in some areas in our responses we would have seen that we indicated that it still requires further consultation with the Office of the State Law Advisor. That meeting with the State Law Advisor took place yesterday. And in some of the areas, we will be happy then to give you the relevant responses. Equally, we will also point out to members where, based on the meeting yesterday with the State Law Advisor, we may have varied our initial response. Chairperson, we request your indulgence to do the presentations back to back, and in between, we will then, at the relevant session, refer to the State Law Advisor to either just confirm or strengthen the position as outlined by them. Thank you. So the first presentation would be done by Nolotando Netno Ikwana. It's on the plant leader's rights as well. Thank you.
Thank you, the presenter, and good morning to everyone. As indicated, I'm dealing with the plant leader's rights bill. These are the acronyms that will be used: DUS, Preserving Distinguished Informed and Stability, CDR, Air Plant Leader's Rights, UPOV, the International Union for the Protection of the Variety of Plants. I just go through our responses. The data column still indicates what we have discussed before, that is the summary of comments from the public and the response that staff gave. And you see that we also have a column where we have received the comments by the parliamentary legal advisor and the response by staff. The first comment was on clause 10 on exceptions to plant breeders' rights. The parliamentary legal advisor said that there was no restriction or problem created by the clause, and the department is in agreement. The second comment was on the exception of plant breeders' rights, where the parliamentary legal advisor confirmed that the protection does not extend to varieties that are already in the market. We're also in agreement, and we'll also just confirm that this clause aims to prevent breeders from collecting royalties more than once. In clause 15, varieties in respect to plant breeders' rights may be granted. We explain that this bill offers protection for any varieties of all plant genera and species. And the parliamentary legal advisors confirmed that the bill complies fully and the department is in agreement in that regard. With regard to clause 19 on the rejection of the application, the comment was a question asking how is the application of plant breeders' rights rejected. It was referred to clause 19.1 that provides for all the conditions that may lead to an application being rejected. And also reminding that this is an application stage, this means that this application won't go further to be processed for DUS evaluations. It's rejected at this stage. and managing to also provide for the registrar to inform the applicant of such a rejection, creating the grounds for that rejection. Clause 21 was on the amendment of an application, in particular the amendment of the description of the variety. In our initial response, the department indicated that we like this clause to be effective because if the description of the variety is unmet, it will create an uncertainty on what was the true identity of that variety. In our initial response, we're suggesting redrafting so that if there's an amendment, it can be republished. But as it was indicated, we had a consultation yesterday with our state legal advisor, and our feeling is that if we were to change that clause and allow for this amendment, it would mean that we might be opening a door for applicants to submit applications for varieties that are not fully developed. So the view is that we remain with the clause as it is, so that we provide that we don't amend the variety description. Clause 52, which is around offenses and penalties. The comment was, a concern was raised whether the Minister of Justice needed to be consulted as well, seeing that this is a justice issue. And at this point, I would like to hand over to Mr. Simon.
Jefferson, thank you. We discussed this matter yesterday and we were of the opinion that we don't think it's necessary that it must be referred to the Minister of Justice. As the department already alluded to, that the files will be done in accordance to the adjustment of contract. The reason for that is to say that Parliament allows or refers the Minister to regulate on legislation, and in terms of the amendment of contract, basically the Minister from time to time, the Minister of Justice, will adjust the Finance Act issue to in line with inflation trends and all that. So basically all acts, if they don't refer to the fine itself but to the penalty or sanction or the term of term, it will be contested to that regulation and to that act, and then it will eventually will be determined in that in line with that. And it's not really an administrative penalty itself, so it will fall in line with that, with the act itself. So it's covered, it's not necessary to refer, probably basically in the same strike or to refer all matters back. It's all legislation applying the same act.
Thank you, Special. And the next comment was again on clause 52. Where the comment was the minister is legislatively empowered to set threshold penalty, and the department is also in agreement. Still on clause 52, where the comment from the public was that this infringement would require the government to police and enforce the rights. The comment from the parliamentary legal advisor was, it indeed creates a terrible offense, but however, it will be taken through the prosecuting processes when necessary, and therefore does not really require the office of the registrar to police. The department is also in agreement. When it came to the family drafting that required clarity, one was on the definition of the breeder, where the public has recommended that person should be indicated as person in a plural form. And the parliamentary legal advisor indicated that intend for the interpretation at the plural form equally refers to singular phrasing. So the department agrees not to amend that definition. And on the definition of faith, the phrasing wants to look at the dictionary meaning of the word and includes a disposal for some form of consideration. In our initial comment, we agreed to amend the definition as suggested, but as it was indicated, we consulted yesterday, I felt that the definition that we have, the aim actually is to expand that dictionary meaning, and hence we have that detailed definition as indicated in the bill. And on clause 46, which deals with entering on premises, the comment from the public was to replace the current clause 24A6 of the current act. And the comment was, these convey the same message. And we look at it again, and we felt that these are a bit different, because clause 46 provides for the consent from the PDR holder, whereas clause 24C6 provides for consent from the owner of the building. And we feel that if we will change and replace 466 with 24A6, that is in the current act. And on the general comment, the inclusion of section 31, the comment by the parliamentary legal advisor was, it deals with amounts to expropriation, and it's enough that it will be in the appropriation bill. Does not need to be included in the current PDR bill, and the department is also in agreement. Thank you.
We get all the presentations for both of them, and then we'll ask questions.
Yes, morning, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members and colleagues from the Department, and our colleagues from the Stakeholders. On the Plan Improvement Bill, I'd like to indicate the following. We'll start with clause 58. In terms of it refers to the evaluation of variety for value calculation and use, which we call VCU. The comment by the parliamentary legal advisor says that this policy to enable the registrar when they find out for the benefit of the public to intervene and make an evaluation that determine the value of that variety on experience, expertise and knowledge that can be used comparatively to reach a fair value and know if the variety is harmful. And the other comment was, what is the intention for clause 38A to repeat investigation? Will it not be the waste for resources? I would like to respond as follows, that we are in agreement or with comments. The word investigate used in 38A2 and 38A will be replaced by the word evaluate or evaluation whenever appropriate. It's not an investigation but evaluation of the variety. And 38A serves to provide for the evaluation if in any doubt we arrive after a number of years about the variety. For example, that is the disease has occurred due to lesions of the proper maintenance. It also serves to provide for the repeat of evaluation in such cases as mentioned, but not without reason. The next clause is on clause 43, which refers to imports of plants and propagation material. The comments was that this was used with the import rules in respect of plants brought into the country and consequences for failure to comply. This concern that we destroy the imported goods without compensation, that amount to unfair provision, and there is no clarifier whether that material will be harmful to the Republic or have any other implications. We We would like to respond as follows, that 1243A says that taking into account the purpose of the importer, therefore giving the choice to the importer for destroying that compensation or to remove or re-export at the expense of the importer. Our reason is that the importer has already given a choice that either we destroy that compensation, or the importer then will bear the cost for removal or re-export. So the choice is up to the importer in that regard. I must indicate this is already a standard principle in most pieces of legislation, that you are given a choice. Clause 43 is the next one. Actually a continuation of clause 43, I must indicate that here is dealing with the import of funds and properties in material. The comment that the submission seems to premise on the view that the importer would be different from the buyer or the seller. Clause 43, in a manner, it is very seem to cater for all such responsibilities and determine as to whom the final responsibility of compliance lies with. As that pointed out, the built-in exemptions will provide the necessary protection and room to enable compliance with domestic rules. We would like to respond as follows, that we are in agreement with this comment and emphasize that the importer is mostly the seller, but may be different from the seller and the buyer. The next clause is clause 44, which deals with export of flux and propagation material. The comments from the parliamentary legal advice is that the same standards must be ensured for the product of the public sent out to other countries to boost economic relations and also to give the country a reputable status and international standing. In this regard, state will be able to meet its obligations to protect the republic as argued with them. So I must say we are in agreement with the comments from the legal advisor from Parliament. Next clause is clause 47, which deals with the appeals against the decision of the registrar or the designated authority. The comments from the parliamentary legal advisors that the prescription of the remuneration of the members of the appeal board could have consistency if made after consultation with the Minister of Finance. We'd like to respond as follows, that we are in agreement for the alternative wording. And then clause 47, again, view of the appeals against the decision of the registrar or the designated authority. The comments were that the role played by the minister during in terms of clause 47 appeals must be clear, and the current wording of this clause is often said. So there was a proposal to reject clause 47. So we'd like to indicate that we are in agreement with the proposed wording. We have the view that as a department, we will like to adopt the uniform principle of appeals for all our appeals. We'd like to align appeals for all our appeals. In this instance, because we are done before the committee, as we are now. But like it was indicated, this was the matter that was discussed yesterday with the legal advisor, and then if there's a need to for further comments, they will indicate that. Next clause is clause 48 and 49, with regards to the advisory committee. They convinced by the financial legal advisor that they agree with that in terms of our response. The point for the consideration is in respect of 49.10, whether the remuneration of the advisory committee members should not be prescribed after the consultation with the Minister of Finance. Would like to suppose as follows that we are in agreement for the alternative way of 49.10. The remuneration of a member of an advisory committee must be prescribed after a consultation with the Minister of Finance, and also in case that the Public Finance Management Act might also assist in this regard. Okay, that is all that we have in terms of the plan improvement bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, that is the response from DAF on issues that were raised by our legal team from Parliament. Members can now engage on the response. Legal advisors from Parliament can participate in the issue. Yes. Honourable members.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the call and for the explanation. Citizen, I'm so concerned about this UPOF story, and I still don't understand the discussion between that and then the board. If South Africa at one stage decides then that we need to do the UPOF, which year? 1991, and we agree on that now. Is that going to have an impact on what is written in the current bill, or will it have, will it change anything on the current agreement? And I'm asking you the question because I still don't know a UPOF story. We still need to discuss that and see what are the implications with agreements that they are writing. Jefferson, and then I'm also looking again just at the public participation process from the department. Is it normal, maybe the state law advisor can help me, for balls to come very, almost late after consultations was happening from the department? I spoke to someone yesterday about some other balls that currently are in draft form from the department. The frustration with people out there, your stakeholders, is that you know, talk to them and then the ball, and they will vanish. I mean, 5 years later, they see them coming back, and things might have changed since the consultation. And I know they have second bite check when they come to Parliament. My question to the state law advisor, when the department is doing it, and they do their stakeholder process, is it normal for 5, 6, 7 years to pass until something then lands on the table? I'm a bit concerned about that. Jefferson, and from the department side, I would also like to see when a new list, the people that were part of the consultation, the state private people, or the plant breeders society, or societies or plant breeders, is it possible that we can get a list of who the actual people were that were consulted, or the groups at least, so that we know how many people that you see during that time? And then there was concern, and I didn't pick it up again today, last time, about the link with the expropriation bill and the expropriation, the wording or the in the expropriation bill that also made an impact on rights of people when they register in South Africa. If you can just get another update or explanation on that.
Thank you, that's all for now. Honorable Jason. Yeah, just a lot of users on the variety. So firstly, the top of the amendment that could not be done in this. But I just need to that when he talked of developed or underdeveloped plans, they could get that. This type of law that I'm not developing, so I can get clear from there. And then, I just want to check if when we talk of the project plan.
Okay.
Then I'm talking of the project plan. other partners. So it probably does not check the economic in-laws. So how does it really contribute to our country? It's what you want plans so that it really contributes, because CH Boston is not starting anywhere for the guests. I'm talking to parents. I want to just on check on that. If they can check, there is a comment now on the collection of varieties. You know, that is good that it is now reduced varieties will be collected not once this time, so that is good. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. South Africa is signatory to a lot of international agreements on this subject. I just have one question. I would like to know whether these were taken into consideration when doing this for testing. Thanks.
Can we get Parliament to respond to that?
Thank you, Chairperson. I heard Honorable Stein asking a question around UPOP, and perhaps, you know, in a follow-up, we need just to have a presentation dealing with UPOP, and I think that will then answer your question on what is UPOP, perhaps what's the difference between 87 and 1991, and then also what are the implications for a country when they accede to these international protocols. So I think we will do a response that outlines the process of the difference and then the process of accession, and how does a country then ensure that their legislation is compliant as a ask from Notano to give also a response on it, but already our existing legislation, the primary legislation, is largely already compliant to 1991, but there's normally a process through which we have to ensure that there is compliance. And throughout the development of the bill, in some cases we have consulted also with the Office of UPOP, their legal people, to ensure that we remain compliant and don't have a provision in our act that is, or in the bill that is now substantially divergent from the UPOP 1991 convention. So the issue is that although we've never cleared formally to UPOP 1991, to a large extent the current act is compliant to 1991, but we will give that kind of response. Chairperson, I hope my colleagues perhaps will have the timeline as to how the bill was presented and developed and where the consultations took place. But you will recall, if you refer back to earlier presentations, right at the start when we started engaging this committee, we had a slide that outlined the timeline. I would want to differ that it may seem to 5 years, but some of the process in terms of policy development may create the impression that the whole process took more than 5 years. So we will definitely be able to give that timeline, because we just have to extract it from previous presentations to this committee. Then, as far as the consultation is concerned, we will give a list. That list is available. It's not a problem. I will ask Nono Tandu and Mr. Mashala to respectively respond to the expropriation bill issue, and then some indication of the economic spin-offs on the export of plant and plant products. And Rotando can also refer to the creation of royalties, which in my view refers to the exhaustion provision. And then on the last question as to whether in development of these bills, whether we consider our international obligations, during the final certification process, there is an exercise undertaken by the sectoral advisors to consider the extent to which the draft proposals is compliant to other national laws, the Constitution, as well as other international agreements largely the international agreement relevant in this regard is the UOF Convention, and that consultation has also taken place, or it has been considered. So the final certification process by the State Law Advisor deals with your question. No more time, please.
Thanks, with regard to convocation, I think we had convocation 2013 as well, with the large number of our stakeholders, but around March this year as well, we had these consultations with our farm representatives, and the rest of 2014 we also were still engaging with the Competition Commission, so the consultations were not as far back as 5 or 6 years ago for the both bills. And there was a question on the variety, whether it's fully developed, if I got that one correctly. We remember that the requirements for plant breeders grant is that the variety must be distinct, uniform, and stable. So when the application is submitted, that's what the plant material is going to be tested for. So at that time, one would have expected that the variety has been developed to reach that stage of distinctness, uniformity, and stability. So that's what we mean by developed. No, as I was just confirming, you have just heard that it's now provided for. I think it was just a comment with regard to the question. I think that it was all for the plan to the
system. Okay, thanks. With regard to the question that relates to the Plant Improvement Act bill, would like to keep the first question was around the economic benefits with regard to the exports of plants and propagation material. Would like to indicate that this particular exercise contributes enormously to the country's economy and the country's growth, domestic borders. On a daily basis, we sign export certificates for seeds and other propagation material to various countries. With regard to vegetables, mostly to Europe and the Asian countries, and with regard to cereals like maize, groundnuts, and beans, mostly to Africa, parts of Europe, and North America, as well as South America. So I must say it is a very important contributor to the country's economy. Regarding the question of consultations that, like my colleague, Ricardo indicated, there's been continuous consultation processes with our stakeholders. Yes, the process started way back in 2010, but there's been those various consultations along the way. That's why when there was that exercise in Parliament, there were not many issues, because most of the issues have dealt with before, because there's been this continuous consultation. In most cases, it's been workshops. Yes, it's been also with meetings where we meet organizations on a one-to-one basis if they have issues with regard to what would be the impact of this bill on their particular industry. The last question, just to add on the, as to whether in terms of our international agreements and obligations, did we consider this when we developed the two bills? I must emphasize we did consider this. With regard to plant improvement, we make reference to the International Seed Testing Association, which we have been a member of from as way back as 1955, and then our facilities get audited every 3 years. So when we develop the bill, we make provision for that we should be in line with our obligations in terms of ISTA, or the International Seed Testing Association. And then we are in the members of the OECD schemes, and then we align the bills to that. When I was making the presentation, I made reference to Vishnu or the value of conservation and use. These come as a result of our participation in the OECD systems. That's all with regards to the value movement. Thank you.
Thank you.
The department can tell us why they haven't signed the UPOF agreement yet, and if they're going to sign it. Then I would also like to know why align the act with UPOF, which they haven't signed yet. And as far as I know, the UPOF development, the development to UPOF was directed or based on industry rather than farming. And in the case of Africa and South Africa, most of the people who will be affected by the act both are farmers and smallholder farmers. So then, please explain why you use UPOF to develop the two roles. Thanks.
Thank you for the question. I will ask Lutando to give some perspective on the UPOF, but what I heard from the honourable member, I just want to make sure I understand the question correctly, is what is the motivation behind assigning or adhering to UPOF? Firstly, I want to confirm that we are a full member or we've ratified UPOF 1978. South Africa also signed UPOF 1991. That was shortly before our first democratic elections, but the signing, the legal people would perhaps give you a better explanation. My understanding of signing it is you're giving an intention to become a full member of the specific version of the convention. However, we've never deposited a full instrument of accession. So perhaps if I could use the following analogy, the engagement was there, but the full marriage was never concluded with the UPOF, with UPOF 1991. So that deals with what is of the status of our membership, 78 versus 1991. But there's no obligation for us to become members of 1991. Okay? Then the following thing is that you were saying that UPOF 91 is more in favor of industry rather than small scale farmers. And that is where I want perhaps Lutando to give some perspective. However, I really think it would be of use if we do have a full presentation around you both, and such that we are all on the same page on this convention.
Thanks, Dr. Jensen. I think I would just also like to reiterate that there's an impression that's created that these deals is the first time that South Africa would be joining UPOF. I'd just like again to remind the members that we have been UPOF member country since 1977, after I said. So it's not just this deal that we now need as UPOF member country. As far as whether it favors the industry or the farmers, this system, I would call it the UPOF system, it actually assures that our farmers have access to varieties. The only issue was, how is that access achieved? Because there's an argument that UPOF 91 actually restricts the way farmers can use such varieties. But if you look at our bill, that is section 10.2,
we are actually improving the way our farmers will be using these varieties, where the minister will describe the type of farmer that will use the varieties, the categories of the kinds of crops, and the conditions for payment of royalties where applicable. So the system itself does benefit farmers. It does benefit the consumers, and it gives farmers a choice to access newer and better varieties. Thank you.
Honorable members, okay, thank you very much. That was the response of the department from the input of the legal team from Parliament. Do you have anything, legal team, Parliament? Okay.
I just removed the name, but I don't have anything.
I have just one comment with respect to the definition of the word cell in the plant leaders. I think just one last part was left in that what I indicated when I said perhaps we need to relook at that definition. I looked at both the dictionary as well as the extensive definitions that the courts have also given in this regard. So my proposal was actually stemming from a definition that came from a court definition. And I was saying that what I suggested is that, in fact, it is dealing with the last portion of the word of the definition there in section one of the Plant Breeders Bill, where the cell includes to exchange or to otherwise dispose of to any person in any manner. And the party comment had actually wanted to deal with that last portion, which said otherwise dispose of to any person in any manner. And then they were speaking to say that perhaps that is too broad and leaves room for uncertainties. And that's why then I was suggesting that perhaps in respect of disposal, we must then restrict it to disposal where there's going to be some kind of consideration when you decide to dispose of your rights. That was basically just the one point which I thought I should just read to you as from the initial response that the department had indicated that it would be amenable to looking at that and implement the training, but with the explanation from the state law advisors, there seems to be a little bit, but it's a matter that the court, that the committee will decide once we and
engage
that are all. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Ma'am, do you still want to... Okay, fine. Department, anything? Okay, thank you very much. That was the end of the discussion on the input that was made by our legal team with, with regard to the two bills that the plant improvement bill and the plant rights bill. So the problem that will follow will have the discussion of the committee looking at both the inputs from the department, the legal team, and the stakeholders. That will be the first discussion of the committee. We will inform the department on the dates when we are going to engage again on this bill. Thank you very much, Dr. and your team. You are here.
Thank you.
honorable members, as they were going out, let me, because the honorable Nkosi has to leave us, just to update that on the issue of the Congress, the chair of chairs has approved for only 5 people. It's 5 people, which is 3 ANC, 2 opposition. So we have Honorable Longwood, I think. Honorable Mwari would be part of the delegation to, and from the ANC we would then have myself, the whip and Tongwan. This time it would be 3 women and 2 men. So that's the update. And in terms of the oversight, because we might not see each other, we will be going to Eastern Cape. The program is not yet final because we have, the department has requested us to interact with SGOP, and we're still working on finalization of the program because they wanted us to have a joint oversight with SGOP. But what we're doing is because we might, Eastern Cape is one of the provinces that has got limited flights. So we're confirming that we're going to start at Umtata. So Umtata and then go to and end in PE, because PE has got a lot of flights. So but members will get the program by next week. So thank you very much, members. That was those issues that we wanted to update members on, and the meetings then the chair. Oh, okay.
Chairperson, I just want to ask a question on the meetings that we have missed now, our first meetings that we're going to miss. I'm looking specifically at the one for next week, the one that we were supposed to have on
the issues about if they are not happy with places. There doesn't seem to be any process in place for appeals. It's like, you know, that's what you get and that's what you get. There's also concerns about the process that goes forward. So I'm a little concerned that we will not have the and if you can look at another time frame for that one specifically, because we have an opportunity to get questions to the department on that.
Now, in terms of our program, Honorable Spain, the Congress is there as part of the program, and the oversight is there too. The only meeting that was missed, and was agreed, was on the one for the transformation touch. That's the meeting that we said we're not going to have, because already we had the Deputy Minister and the GG for Forestry coming to present to us. So the other meeting was held, and but because of the changing of the program of Parliament, which is not there, of course, means that we just shift them in terms of the availability of time. Not that we are changing the program. It will just be the shifting because of, if Parliament says they're not going to have this, they change the program, we will be affected, but we will not change the program, we will change the time and the dates that we are going to meet with those people. Yes. Okay. Thank you very much, members.